giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Brett's Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donig. Smashville lives here on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Brett's Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan here with you. Back with Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean this week.
Happy to be back.
Alex filling in for Willie Donig, who is in Stockholm, Sweden, with the Nashville Predators, who are preparing to take on the Pittsburgh Penguins in the NHL Global Series. Games on Friday and Sunday. Friday's game has a 1 p.m. Central puck drop. Sunday's game has an 8 a.m. Central puck drop.
That'll be fun.
So you can have some hockey with your eggs, pancakes, waffles, bagels, English muffins, whatever you prefer. What kind of breakfast guy are you, Alex Daugherty?
I'm almost exclusively a cereal guy. Just cereal. Occasional bagel, but cereal.
Well, you can have Predators hockey with your cereal on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. puck drop Central Time on Sunday for the second of the two games in Stockholm, Sweden. Well, before the Predators left for Stockholm, in what could have been the most predictable result, the Predators lost 6-3 to the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden on Monday. And the reason why I say it was incredibly predictable is before the game, it was well known that the New York Rangers had not won a game at home, 0-6-1. The Rangers had been shut out five times in seven home games. I believe they were the first team in nearly 100 years to be shut out in five of its first seven home games. So we all knew what was going to happen. The Rangers, who scored six goals across those first seven home games, scored six against the Nashville Predators on Monday. So the Predators' doom spiral continues. They have lost 8 of 9, 1-6-2 in the past nine games. The one win in that stretch came against the worst team in the league, the Calgary Flames. And as you might imagine, Alex, you're hearing the same things that I'm hearing from Predators fans. They're all pissed. Yeah. And understandably so. Predators fans want Andrew Burnett to be fired. I have said that it's time for the Predators to fire Andrew Burnett. We can talk about where you are on that. But I think the question we are all wondering is, how do the Predators escape this doom spiral? Because quite frankly, I don't see a way out of it right now.
Yeah, and what you saw against the Rangers was a lot of the same thing you saw from the previous game against Dallas, in which, I mean, now the defensive issues are starting to emerge and the goaltending issues are starting to emerge. Not only are they a bad offensive team, second or third worst in the NHL in goal scoring, now their defense is starting to let them down as well. Early on, you at least saw them hold on to some one goal leads late, 2-1, 3-2, that kind of thing. But now they're having to chase games behind 2 and 3 goals, and this is like the worst team. This is the worst constructed team for trying to come back and score yourself out of a deficit, right? They just don't have that kind of firepower. So, yeah, they've lost nine of their last 10. And, yeah, 23 goals over those nine games, 23 goals scored. That's pretty bad. But 36 allowed. That's also terrible. So they're just like, it does seem to be a doom spiral. It is very strange that now they have this weird cross-international kind of break thing where they have a few days off and then they have to play Pittsburgh in a different arena. And so it's almost like, could it give them some sort of a reset? Maybe. But you know what it won't do? It won't change the roster at all. It won't change who the team is putting on the ice every night. It won't change who's behind the bench, at least not yet. And it won't change the general manager who put this all together. So all of that is the same, and we're seeing the same results. Last year, through 18 games, they had 5 wins. This year, through 18 games, they have 5 wins. So it's more of the same.
Let's just take stock of where the Predators are since the start of last season. Because the Predators, since the start of last season, have played 100 games. A nice round number. We all love round numbers.
Yep.
The Predators have won 35 of their past 100 games. Those 35 wins are the third fewest in the NHL since the start of last season. The Predators have also been held to two or fewer goals in 56 of those 100 games, which is the most in the NHL. So,
do you have those other two teams that are the third few, the first and second?
I'm guessing not written down, but I am fairly certain they are the Blackhawks and the Sharks.
That's what I would guess too. And what's funny about that is, I think the Sharks and the Blackhawks probably feel okay about themselves this year because at least they're fun, they're goal scoring, they're winning a few games here and there. I guess what I'm saying is most of their losses and lack of wins came from last year rather than this year. They have a little bit of momentum. The Predators have nothing. I mean, they're sitting at the bottom, it feels like, right?
The only team below the Predators in the Western Conference standings and in the NHL standings are the Calgary Flames at 4-12-2 at time of recording. And that's the only team the Predators have defeated in the past couple of weeks. So, yikes. It's rough out there. And I have said this for years. I wrote a story for The Athletic following the Predators' first round sweep at the hands of the Colorado Avalanche. The headline was, "The Predators will not get better until they allow themselves to get worse." And I stand by that 3 years later, because the Predators, quite frankly, the Predators have really never undergone a true rebuild in their franchise history. They've had some down years, but never the types of rebuilds that you've seen in recent years in Chicago or in Anaheim or in San Jose or in Buffalo. You haven't seen that type of rebuild from the Predators. And Eric Francis of Sportsnet.ca, who reports on the Calgary Flames, wrote a story about the Flames that, honestly, you could just copy and paste the Predators where he wrote Flames, and it would basically be applicable. But in that story, he published, and this was published a couple of days ago, so some of these totals may be outdated, but he published a chart of all of the points leaders in the NHL and where they were drafted. So let me read to you quickly, as of a few days ago, the NHL point leaders and where they were drafted. Nathan MacKinnon, number one overall. Leo Carlson in Anaheim, number two overall. Connor Bedard, number one overall. Macklin Celebrini, number one overall. William Nylander, number eight overall. Kirill Kaprizov, number 135 overall. So he's the outlier. Jack Eichel, second overall. Makar, fourth overall. Scheifele, seventh overall. Oh, actually, I forgot. Connor McDavid, first overall. Then Scheifele at seventh overall. Tavares, first overall. Rantanen, 10th overall. Malkin, second overall. Cutter Gauthier, fifth overall. Sidney Crosby, first overall. You've probably noticed a pattern that most of the top scorers in the NHL this season were either first or second overall picks, and all but one of them was a top 10 pick. Thank you. I trip over my tongue there. Kaprizov, drafted number 135 overall, is the only outlier.
I remember when you published that. I think I largely agreed. There were parts of it that I disagreed with on the take about tanking necessarily, because it's not a guarantee.
Right.
You don't know what you're going to get in terms of the pick. You don't know if that player is going to be the one. I think the problem with that particular situation was that 22-23 season, where they should have tanked, is the season that they could have gotten Connor Bedard. With that, you know, obviously he would make a difference. And then the season after that, the 18 game point streak and all that stuff that led to the 24 first round series against the Vancouver Canucks. Yep, that was fun. Good first round series. Went six games. That was a lot of fun. They missed out on Macklin Celebrini. So they've missed some big chances. Now, could there be a movement towards them willing to not be as good and at least like put themselves in line to get a top 10 pick, like you mentioned? Because again, getting the number one and number two, you have to be real bad and you have to get pretty lucky to do that.
Right.
Just being in the top 10 enough times, I think that's enough. And they did that last year. They got Brady Martin. They need to do that again. They need to get another top three, top four, top five pick, get a good player, and then maybe even another season of that, and have three or four top 10 picks in a row that they feel like they can build a core around. That's the only thing I think.
clearly the key to all of this was Cole Smith. Cole Smith's been out of the lineup for a few games now. The penalty kill, by the way. With Cole Smith in the lineup, 87.8% since he left the lineup because of injury, 62.5%. So Cole Smith is the glue.
The straw that stirs the drink.
Correct. The glue that held this thing together. I am being slightly facetious. But I'm just watching this team, and you watch this team every day as well, and all of you listening watch this team every day. It's just getting harder and harder and harder to watch them on a regular basis. I went to the game on Saturday against the Dallas Stars, and I said to you and Robbie Stanley and Jim Diamond and Emma Lingen on Press Row, remember when it was fun to watch the Nashville Predators? It hasn't been a lot of fun watching the Nashville Predators lately. And in a moment, we will talk about a player who is making it fun to watch the Nashville Predators as of late. But I just don't know how long it's going to take for the Predators to get out of this, because they have been adamant that they are unwilling to do what most of these other bad teams have done, which is be bad and be bad for a little while.
Yeah,
look,
right.
The Chicago Blackhawks, since winning three Stanley Cup championships, they've been largely irrelevant.
Since 2017.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the Blackhawks are a big brand, right? The Blackhawks will never truly be irrelevant, but they've been at or near the bottom of the standings every year. They're not a threat to compete, or haven't been. But this year, it seems to all be clicking. Connor Bedard's taking a big step. They have other young players that are taking big steps as well. And I know that Blackhawks fans at least have the Stanley Cup championships to say, hey, it hasn't been fun being a Blackhawks fan lately, but at least they have the titles, right? But, you know, I think the Predators are going to have to really consider what's most important. Continuing to flounder this way and give off the impression that they're built to compete, but they're really not. Or do you really take that full step back? Excuse me, not one of these half in, half out, to borrow a term from David Poile, competitive rebuilds. I'm talking about a full on rebuild, which Predators fans really haven't had to deal with. But coming up next, let's talk about one player who is actually giving Predators fans something to cheer about. Matthew Wood. We will discuss Matthew Wood coming up next. Adam Vingan with Alex Daugherty filling in for Willie Donig this week on Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan alongside Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean, who is filling in for Willie Donig. Once again this week, Willie continues to be in Stockholm, Sweden, with the Nashville Predators as they prepare for the NHL's Global Series against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Two games Friday and Sunday. Friday, a 1 p.m. Central puck drop. Sunday, an 8 a.m. Central puck drop. We look forward to having Willie back stateside next week. And Alex, the silver lining in the Predators' 6-3 loss to the Rangers on Monday was that all three goals were scored by Matthew Wood. Matthew Wood records his first career NHL hat trick. He is the second rookie in Predators history to score a hat trick, following Blake Jeffrion in March of 2011. If I am not mistaken, on the FanDuel Sports Network broadcast, in terms of age, Matthew Wood is the youngest player in Predators history to record a hat trick. He's off to a great start. 6 goals, 4 assists, 10 points in 11 games. And keep in mind, he didn't start the season with the Predators because he was injured. So since he's been back in the lineup, he's been incredibly productive. You wrote a story at the Tennessean with the headline, "Why Matthew Wood Might Provide the Only Excitement for the Nashville Predators This Season." What have you seen from Matthew Wood? What stands out to you?
Yeah, and that's not meant to be a slight on Matthew Wood either, because I really do think he's pretty fun to watch. If only because he actually has a sort of shoot-first mentality and a sort of an aggression to score goals that I think a lot of players on the team are missing right now. They're all either trying to pass first or they're trying to create the perfect play, especially in the power play. I just think Wood seems to be a little bit more just let the shot fly, right? And that's what it looks like right now. The difference, or I guess the thing with Matthew Wood that's interesting is he's not exactly what the Predators need in terms of like what's going to change the franchise forward. You know, he's not a playmaking, speedy center down the middle, right? If they got someone like that, they would be a much different team because they'd have a young player that can transform the game up the middle. He's not that. He is a big, rangy wing, right-handed shooter that is very skilled at shooting, but not the fastest skater. He didn't even play center at college in Minnesota. He was mostly a wing. I believe he was mostly a wing at Connecticut too. And I don't think there's any plans to ever move him back to center. I mean, it would be interesting to try it at least if you're going to have a lost season like this. Hey, why not put him in there and see what happens? But he's a wing, right? And that's what's interesting. Like he has an ability to score that I think not a lot of other players on the team do. He still needs more around him. So he's been playing mostly with Eric Kalla, right? Or he's on the Bunting line with Svechkov. That's what it is. Yeah, Bunting, Svechkov, and Wood have been together. Although two of his goals on Monday were power play goals. He just has a really good knack for goal scoring, and I think that's what they need. He's got six in this season, and I mean, of all of the players on the team right now, you feel most confident that he's going to be able to make a difference out there than anyone, except for maybe Forsberg. And that it's so, yeah, at least you've got that, Predators fans. You've got something to look forward to. He's 20 years old. He's, you know, going to be a big part of the future moving forward, I think.
The question is, can the Predators find another young player to be Matthew Wood's running buddy?
Yeah.
And maybe it's Brady Martin one day.
Yeah, I mean, they played together in the preseason. They were together for a while until he got injured. That seems to be maybe a part of the plan in the future.
Now, pardon my ignorance here. I haven't started studying draft prospects. I know that the Predator season is going south in a hurry, but I still can't bring myself to start really caring about 2026 NHL draft prospects.
I dove into it this morning, actually.
Look, Gavin McKenna, out of Penn State, is the prize. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Is he a forward or a winger?
He's a
winger or a center.
He is a wing. He is a wing. But he's a you know, there are other wings in the NHL that I don't know what he's going to end up being. But he is a wing. He's not a center. But man, if you got him, you'd feel really good about your future because he's that good. He's very, very good.
To our previous conversation in the first segment, the Predators absolutely need a player like that, because if you read all of the prospect grades from the people who know these things, I think the consensus is that they like the Predators prospect pool from a quantity standpoint, like a lot of good potential NHL impact type players, but no one who stands head and shoulders above everybody else. This organization desperately needs that kind of prospect. The kind of prospect that, look, doesn't have to come in and play at 18 years old, although Brady Martin did play a few games at 18 years old, but someone that can get fans excited. Because I'm looking at the rookies who have played games for the Predators this season. There are five: Matthew Wood, Adam Willsby, Ozzie Weisblatt, Brady Martin, and Joachim Kemmel. And the other rookies have combined for five assists over the course of the season, although Brady Martin has only played in three games. Joachim Kemmel has only played in two. And Weisblatt has been fun to watch. He is a major irritant out there.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that he pisses off opponents, and they just want to run after him. And you need that. You need that on your team, and Weisblatt is a great story. But Weisblatt is not going to be the player who gets the Predators back to competitiveness. Right?
Right.
Adam
correct.
Willsby, I've been impressed by Willsby on the blue line, but again, I don't see Willsby as the Roman Josi transformative type. I think he can be a really solid player on the back end for many years, but I don't see him as a core player. And you hope that Matthew Wood can become that. But outside of those players, Who outside of the organization, but within the system, should excite Predators fans? I know Riker Lee is a name that gets Predators fans excited. He's been playing well at Michigan State. But is it Igor Surin, right?
Yeah.
In the KHL, lighting it up out there. So which prospects who aren't in the organization at the moment, meaning playing for the Predators, playing for the Admirals, which ones should Predators fans be most excited
about?
Yeah,
I think there's actually quite a few. And like you mentioned, the most prospect gurus like the quantity of the Predators, if not the top heaviness. I mean, they don't have a top heavy, like, this is a star in the making kind of guy. Igor Surin is the one that I would say is most likely to come over and make an immediate impact. However, he's still a couple years away because he signed through 27 with Lokomotiv in the KHL. I think the problem is, yeah, so Igor Surin's exciting. I think there's some excitement with Riker Lee. Don't forget Teddy Stiga at Boston College. He's had a decent start to the season. Again, a winger, not a center. The center depth in their system right now continues to be a little weaker. I mean, David Edstrom is 20 years old. He's in Milwaukee. He's not a flashy offensive guy. I think he's going to be solid, something like a Svechkov, maybe a little better, but nothing that transforms the offense, right? There's another kid named Aiden Fink, who I think you've talked about before. He's at Penn State playing with Gavin McKenna, by the way. I think he's really good, but you know, what is he really? He's a little on the smaller side. Is he a middle six guy, kind of like an Evangelista type, or is he something else? So there's a lot of excitement, but they still are on the hunt for a center here. I mean, like, that if they don't find it in their draft prospects, they're going to have to go find it elsewhere, and that means that with all of this stuff that they've stockpiled, what if they package a couple really good wingers for one good center, or a good winger and a good defenseman for a really good center? They might have to think about doing that, because unless you luck out and get Gavin McKenna, or you get whoever the next top center is the next year, it still looks like you don't have exactly the pieces you need to build a future core.
I'm just glad that the Predators have a young player who is making a difference, because this team has a lot of old players who are not making a difference. So, and I admire Matthew Wood. I saw his post-game interview with Lindsay Raleigh on the FanDuel Sports Network broadcast, and I thought he handled himself well, trying to contain his excitement while realizing the gravity of the situation.
Yeah, right.
Like, he can say, I recorded my first career hat trick at Madison Square Garden, but my team got its butt kicked in the process. So,
and by the way, his three goals were great. I mean, the first one was a little rebound in front. The second one, a beautiful power play goal, one timer over Shesterkin, and then the third one, a little wrist shot in close on a tough angle that just beat Shesterkin clean. It wasn't like O'Reilly's goal the other night that went off his shoulder, right? I mean, these were three very solid goals.
So Matthew Wood will look to continue his hot start to his NHL career. Well, he did debut last season, but it's still young in his NHL career. He will look to continue that hot start over the weekend against the Pittsburgh Penguins as part of the NHL's Global Series in Stockholm, Sweden. First game Friday at 1 p.m. Central, second game Sunday at 8 a.m. Central. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we'll take a look at some players who could be on the move. Alex has a story for the Tennessean detailing which players could indeed be on the move for the Nashville Predators. There is also one player whose name is out there that, quite frankly, I can't get behind this. I'm not sure where it's coming from. I quite frankly don't understand it. And we will discuss that coming up next. Adam Vingit alongside Alex Doherty in for Willie Donick this week on Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingit and Alex Doherty of the Tennessean here with you. The Predators back in action Friday at 1 p.m. Central against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Dan Muse and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Former Predators assistant coach, now the head coach of the Penguins. The puck drop on game one of the Global Series, Friday at 1 p.m. Central, of course, right here on 102.5 The Game. By the way, fun fact, Alex, The Predators and Penguins will become the first set of teams to meet in multiple regular season games overseas after each claimed a 3-1 win during Game 1 Japan 2000.
I watched that game on television.
Let's just talk about the spelling of Game 1. Capital G, capital A, capital M, capital E, space, capital O, capital N, lowercase e. Like, that's some sort of, like, new metal band from around that time. Game 1 Japan 2000, or some sort of, like, obscure Nintendo 64 game. Those games were the fifth and sixth regular season NHL games played outside of North America. At that time, the NHL had yet to stage a regular season game in Europe. So, fun fact for you, Steven Stamkos also made his regular season NHL debut in a game played outside of North America in 2008 with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Scott Hartnell, of course, made his Predators debut in those two games in Japan in 2000. So the Predators adding to their history overseas. We'll see how the Predators do on Friday and Sunday against the Penguins. And understandably, Alex, with the way the season is going for the Predators, there's a lot of chatter out there, scuttlebutt, if you will, about the Predators and who could be traded. And by the way, before we get to that, I do want to highlight a story that was written by our friend Greg Wyshynski on ESPN.com. Greg is based in New York, so when the Predators were visiting the Rangers on Monday, he spoke to Ryan O'Reilly about that viral post-game interview where he claimed that he's had one good year in his career and he can't make a 6-foot pass and all of that stuff. And by the way, although O'Reilly's self-flagellation, there's a big word for you, is admirable, it is completely unwarranted because he has played well this season. You can look at the traditional numbers. You can also look at the underlying numbers. But I liked this quote from O'Reilly, from Greg's story. Quote, O'Reilly said that he, quote, should have just bit my tongue, end quote, after the game. Quote, obviously, you don't want things to get out there and it doesn't look good on anyone on the team. I think I sound a bit like a baby where I should have politely shut up and be better and then that's it, end quote.
I mean, as a member of the media, I would prefer he not bite his tongue and say what's on his mind at all times.
Correct.
That's what I would like. So, but I thought there was nothing wrong with what he said.
No.
It was interesting.
He seems to have a history of doing this.
Yes.
He's incredibly critical of himself. So this is not something out of character for Ryan O'Reilly. But anyway, before we get to your story about which Predators could be on the move, there is one Predators player whose name is starting to get out there. I frankly can't quite understand why. And that's UC Saros. Mm-hmm. UC Saros has been mentioned in connection with the Edmonton Oilers a bit lately because the Oilers are struggling. The Oilers goaltending has been an issue for many years. Stuart Skinner, if you've watched the Oilers in the playoffs, he has his moments, but he's not a true number one goalie, at least in my opinion. But UC Saros is in the first year of an 8-year contract. He has a full no movement clause. I don't see a world where UC Saros leaves Nashville in the first year of his 8-year contract. There's cap situations you have to maneuver around as well. So it sounds like a nice idea in theory, but I cannot envision a world where UC Saros gets traded.
Same. In my story, I have essentially sorted the Predators roster into categories of here's the list of untouchable players, here's the list of players they should sell, and I have one category that's just called It's Complicated, like from the old Facebook relationship moniker. It's Complicated, and the only two players in the It's Complicated category are UC Saros and Steven Stamkos. So the Saros one is more about because, as you mentioned, it's the beginning of a huge contract, and it just started it. And also, so since he has the no move clause, like the player has to be on board with this. I see nothing out there that says UC Saros is unhappy in Nashville and wants out. I mean, there's been nothing about that. So like, regardless of how much the Edmonton Oilers or anyone else would want to trade for a guy like that, I don't think that there's any interest from Nashville to do that. I don't think there's any interest from Saros to do that. I just think it's not really going to happen. The other half of that is, as I just mentioned, Stamkos. There is a little bit of noise or rumor or whispers around Stamkos possibly being interested in a move, but it's not been substantiated. Again, it's all just rumor. Stamkos has not said anything about this, about wanting to get traded or anything. But his situation is interesting, right? Because he's got 2 more years on this deal and his production has been terrible. I mean, he has 3 goals in 18 games this year. And since he's come to Nashville, it just seems like there's not a good fit. I still don't think he would get moved, but could Barry Trotz and Stamkos get together and say, hey, why don't we make this work? Just like he did with Ryan McDonagh, whatever that was, a year and a half ago. Yeah, so I'm with you. I don't think Soros is getting moved. I would think between the two of the players that it's more complicated than just yes or no, Stamkos would be the most likely, but that certainly doesn't mean they're going to deal him.
With Stamkos, and we've talked about this on this show as well as on DMA, Svingen, and Donick, when it comes to Stamkos, you have to find a team willing to take on at least part of Stamkos' contract. He's got three years left on it, including this year. So 2 more after this one.
Yep.
With an $8 million cap hit, I have to imagine that if the Predators trade Stamkos, they will retain some salary in some form. But you also have to find a team that has a center who can get Steven Stamkos the puck. So it's not just about, hey, we want Steven Stamkos. We like Steven Stamkos.
Yeah.
It's about finding the right fit for him. And clearly it's not a fit here. And look, I was skeptical when Tommy Novak was going to be centering Steven Stamkos. I was even more skeptical when Fedor Svechkov was going to be centering Steven Stamkos. You know, Eric Halla, I believe, has centered Steven Stamkos. Look, you're not going to get a lot out of Steven Stamkos if those are the centers that he's playing with. You know, to me, the most obvious trade candidates, the Predators have multiple players who are pending unrestricted free agents. Eric Halla is a pending unrestricted free agent. Michael Bunting is a pending unrestricted free agent. Michael McCarron. Like, those are the types of players that are likely to be moved. And you're probably not getting a ton for those players. The O'Reilly one is interesting, though.
Yeah, and that is the one I think that is not only the best trade candidate and the one that could get you the biggest return, but is also probably the one that's most likely to happen, to actually happen this year. I have him in the category of sell high, and I think that Ryan O'Reilly, this would be a good example of selling high. I'm not saying they should trade him before Thanksgiving or by December. You know, I just think at some point this season, assuming his production continues the way it is now, you need to try to move him because you could get a lot for him now. He's not just a rental. He would be on contract for the new team through 27. Bunting and Halla, like you said, also in the sell high category, although the phrase sell high is doing a lot of work there. Eric Holland, Michael Bunting, what are you going to get for those guys? A fourth round pick, fifth round pick? I don't know, but probably something in that nature. Maybe a third.
I think you could probably get more for Michael McCarron than you think.
See,
because he's big
for McCarron, but I was talking about Bunting.
Yeah.
So McCarron, I have in a different category, and I put McCarron in the category of, I think you only sell him if the price is really good.
Yes, and I think it would surprise Predators fans.
Yeah,
which was my earlier point.
Yeah.
I think it would surprise Predators fans. They'd be like, Michael McCarron.
Yeah,
well, he's huge and he wins faceoffs and he fights, and those are things that GMs still value.
Exactly, and he's a really cost efficient player on the Predators right now. So like, you know, if you don't move him, I think that's you need someone on your team like him for the rest of the season too. So like if a team comes and says, hey, we'll give you a second round pick for Michael McCarron, absolutely you do it. But there's no reason to shop around McCarron because he just does enough for you currently. He's probably one of the better centers on the team right now. There's a lot of other guys in that kind of category. I think Nick Blankenberg is in that category. I think Cole Smith, even though he's injured, these are valuable players to the Predators right now that not a lot of other teams are going to be calling on necessarily. And by the way, so, and I just wanted to mention, like, guys who are untouchable. I don't know who would be in your untouchable category for, like, guys you just don't worry about trading right now. I have Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi in that category because, mm-hmm. I mean, Josi obviously has the injury. But I also have two other players. I have, and one of which we've talked about today, Matthew Wood, I think, would be an untouchable. He's a guy that you want to build your process around and build towards the future. The other one would be Nick Perbix, mostly because Nick Perbix has been probably, since Josi went out, the best defenseman on the team. He's signed to a very team-friendly contract through next season, so he's not a not a guy you're going to lose next summer. And he's just been really good. I think that Nick Perbix, you should at least hold on to him for the next year, and then even see if you could extend him, because he's been quite good for the Predators this year. So that was four untouchables: Forsberg, Josi, Perbix, and Wood.
It's strange to hear Nick Perbix in an untouchable category. But I understand your point. Quickly, when it comes to O'Reilly, the trade I look at as a blueprint is the trade that the Islanders and Avalanche made at the deadline last year for Brock Nelson. Mm. And that included Cal Ritchie, yeah. who was one of Colorado's top prospects, going to the Islanders, and a first-round pick. To me, that's where it starts with O'Reilly.
Exactly.
If you want O'Reilly, it will cost you a first-round pick and one of your top forward prospects.
And we've heard that this should be a seller's market this year, that there's enough interest and there's enough players available, or so few players available, that the sellers should make out well. I totally agree. I think a first-round pick and a good prospect like Cal Ritchie was for the Islanders last year would be the starting point for O'Reilly. But, like last year, Trotz said, we're not moving O'Reilly because we're going to pretend like he has a no-trade clause. I don't think you want to get in a situation where you just jack up the price and say, well, we want two firsts and a good prospect, and then you don't sell him because you value him too high. You have to at least try to move him.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we'll wrap up the show by talking about what everybody wants to talk about, and that is the future of head coach Andrew Burnett. We'll do that next. Adam Vingan, Alex Daugherty, in for Willie Donick tonight on Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean here with you. Predators are back in action Friday, 1 p.m. Central, against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the NHL Global Series. By the way, Stockholm is 7 hours ahead of Nashville, in case you were wondering. The second game on Sunday, an 8 a.m. Central puck drop, so early morning with the Nashville Predators on Sunday. The Predators looking to snap out of their funk. They've lost 8 of 9, 1-6-2 in their past 9 games. And because of that, Alex, we'll wrap up the show having the discussion a lot of Predators fans are having, and that's about the future of Andrew Burnett. And my thoughts on this are well known. I would have fired Andrew Burnett after roughly 25 games last season, because my rationale at the time was, it is statistical fact that teams that fire their coaches get a bump in the standings. And at the time, the Predators season was hanging on by a thread. And I thought, if you're trying to salvage the season, that's what you have to do. And Barry Trotz stood behind Andrew Burnett. You tell me if you agree with this, Alex. If Andrew Burnett's boss was anybody other than Barry Trotz, he would have been fired by now. I believe that strongly.
Yeah, I you're probably right. The Barry Trotz connection here is what's keeping Andrew Burnett in the current position. Here's the problem. Firing Andrew Burnett does absolutely nothing to change the roster.
Correct.
And it's just, what is, let's say they fire Andrew Burnett and then they name Luke Richardson the interim coach, which I think is, I believe that's what they would do.
So you don't think Barry Trotz is going to get back behind the bench, as many people have suggested?
I mean, that would be pretty stunning, and I think that would be incredible news, and I would love to write about that a lot, but I don't think that would happen. But let's say that the normal thing happens, and the assistant coach that was a former head coach, Luke Richardson, steps in and is the interim. What is he going to do to unlock this offense that Burnett couldn't do? You know, how much are things going to really change tactically and maybe leadership-wise that Burnett isn't already doing? I mean, it's just you look around the barn and you realize you don't have the horses. It doesn't mean you get a new, a new farm. You just don't have the equipment necessary to make this happen. But it's a reality. And the winning has just dropped off a cliff, and the ability to find something in the team's game that works consistently from night to night is just not there. They cannot get goal scoring. Now their defense looks bad. Their power play has been terrible. Penalty kill, unless you have Cole Smith in the lineup, doesn't look great either. Goaltending is just, all of it. It's just, none of it is working. You're going to have to make a decision on Burnett, and I would not be surprised if it happens before the new year.
I said on Monday on DVD that I thought this week was absolutely critical for Andrew Burnett, and it did not get off to a good start against the Rangers, a 6-3 loss on Monday at Madison Square Garden. And look, the Penguins are playing better than anybody thought. Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin have unearthed their younger selves, and they're near the top of the leaderboard in points this season in the NHL. I think if the Predators have even one more performance, like the one they had on Monday, let's say they split the two games in Sweden, but one of the losses is like the one we just saw on Monday, I feel like the Predators really have no choice.
I agree.
And I completely agree with you about what's it going to fix? Really nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get that new coach bump that I talked about before, but it's not going to make the Predators any more of a threat in the Western Conference. But it satisfies the bloodlust. Fans love to see people get their comeuppance for poor performance.
And I know we're kind of running towards the end here, but the Winter Classic in 2020, Peter Laviolette towards the end.
Yep.
That felt different because, first of all, not only did Laviolette have more success, but there was a much longer sustained feeling of he's lost the locker room kind of vibe. And I just don't see that with Burnett. I see a terrible on-ice product. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I don't see his message isn't hitting or the guys aren't rallying. You know, like, I just don't see that the same way. I mean, would you agree? Like, the Laviolette ending was much more...
Yes, you could tell in November and December of 2019 leading into the Winter Classic on New Year's Day 2020, you could tell that things were amiss. And I've told this story many times. I left the dressing room at the Cotton Bowl telling myself, it may not happen today, it may not happen tomorrow, but Peter Laviolette's getting fired. And it happened 5 days later.
Right. And
So I hear you. Like, I don't... You're around the team more often than I am now. But in my limited dealings, I don't get the sense that this team has quit on its coach.
No.
But sometimes you don't have to wait for that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to just do it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, and this is how we'll wrap it up. The longer that Barry Trotz stands by Andrew Burnett, it goes from admirable to delusional. And look, Barry Trotz has talked about how patient David Poile was with him. It's a different time. That was an expansion franchise in the late 90s. That doesn't happen anymore. So I know that Barry Trotz wants to practice what what David Poile preached and be patient, but there's only so much patience you can have before it's harming your product. But we'll see how the Predators respond to their rough loss in New York on Friday against the Pittsburgh Penguins, the first half of the NHL Global Series, the second half on Sunday. Puck drop at 1 p.m. Central on Friday, 8 a.m. Sunday, right here on 102.5 The Game. Alex, thank you once again.
Absolutely.
For sitting in for Willie Donick, who will be back next week. We look forward to having Willie Donick back stateside. We've missed him so because he was incredibly ill, if you recall, last week. Think about Steven Stamkos' buzzer beater. Willie's throat, it sounded so hoarse, it made my throat hurt listening to the broadcast, but he's feeling much better, and we'll have him back in full force next week. Until next week, Alex, thank you for joining us again today.
Absolutely.
Yet another edition of Preds Insiders right here on 102.5 The Game.